As soon as hostilities end, Stalin had said at Yalta, the soldiers are forgotten and lapse into oblivion. He wished this were so, but the prestige of Marshal Zhukov had never been higher. The Western press even acclaimed him as Stalin's successor. Stalin managed Zhukov by using the aviator's case against him, torturing Air Marshal Novikov and 70 generals to implicate him. Then he had Zhukov's home searched. We can simply say, Abakumov reported gleefully, that Zhukov's dacha is a museum. There were so many paintings, he continued, some even hung in the kitchen. Zhukov even went so far as to hang over his bed a huge canvas depicting two naked women, yet they did not find a single Soviet book. Bizarrely, they confiscated a doll belonging to one of the marshal's daughters, and his memoirs. Leave history writing to the historians, Stalin warned. Zhukov was summoned to the Supreme Military Council, where Novikov's testimony was read out. Zhukov had claimed credit for the Soviet victory, criticized Stalin, and created his own clique. This was intolerable, declared Stalin, turning to the generals, but only Golikov, whom Zhukov had relieved of command in 1943, really denounced him. Then Molotov, Beria, and Bulganin attacked the marshal for Bonapartism, demanding that Zhukov be put in his place. Zhukov defended himself, but admitted to having inflated his own importance. What shall we do with Zhukov? Asked Stalin, who, typically, had expressed no opinion. The potentates wanted him repressed. The soldiers did not. Stalin suggested demoting Zhukov. He was expelled from the CC, his trophies confiscated, friends tortured, and then demoted and exiled to the Urals. But Stalin never let Abakumov arrest the marshal for planning a Bonapartist coup. I don't trust anyone who says Zhukov could do this. I know him very well. He's a straightforward, sharp person, able to speak plainly to anyone, but he'll never go against the CC. Zhukov was not alone in his museum of gold and paintings. Corruption is the untold story of Stalin's post-war terror. The magnates and marshals plundered Europe with the avarice of Goering, casting aside much of their old Bolshevik modesty. Although foreign visitors were told, "Comrade Stalin cannot endure immorality," he had always believed that conquerors could help themselves to some booty and local girls. The soldiers reached the treasures first, but it was the Chekists who enjoyed the best swag. At Gagra, Beria pursued and impressed female athletes in a fleet of plundered speedboats. Abakumov drove around Moscow in Italian sports cars and assembled an antique treasure trove like a department store. Stalin's staff were mired in corruption. Vlasik, the vizier who ran a luxurious empire of food, drink, and mansions, entertained his courtesans at official rest homes. Limousines delivered the concubines, who received apartments, caviar, tickets to Red Square parades and football games. Vlasik seduced his friends' wives by showing them his photographs of Stalin. He spent much of the Potsdam conference drinking, fornicating, or stealing. He even pilfered from Stalin's assigned villa, stealing 100 pieces of porcelain, pianos, clocks, cars, 3 bulls, and 2 horses, transported home in MGB trains and planes. Then there was the massive wastage of food at Stalin's dachas. Vlasik was denounced for selling off the extra caviar. He was almost arrested, but instead Stalin let him explain his sins, and Vlasik kept his job. Vlasik's mistresses, like Beria's pimps, informed on him to Abakumov, who in turn was denounced by his MGB rival, General Serov, who was said to have stolen the crown of the King of Belgium. By now, courtesans, procurers, and MGB generals were informing on each other in a merry-go-round of sexual favors and betrayals. Stalin filed the denunciations away for later use. Crown Prince Vasily set a new standard for corruption, debauchery, and caprice. Yet beneath his arrogance, Vasily was the most terrified of all the courtiers. When father dies, Khrushchev, Beria, and Bulganin will tear me apart. Do you realize what it's like living under the axe? He callously abandoned his wife, Galina, taking their son, Sasha, to live with him at the house on the embankment. Then Vasily married Marshal Timoshenko's daughter, Yekaterina. His apartment was not grand enough, so he demanded Vlasik's elegant villa. Vasily brought a plane load of loot from Germany. Golden ornaments, diamonds, emeralds, dozens of carpets, lots of ladies' lingerie, a huge number of men's suits, overcoats, fur coats, fur wraps, astrakhan, until his house was bursting with gold, German carpets and cut glass. There was so much that his wife, Timoshenko, gradually sold it and pocketed the money. When this marriage collapsed, he married a swimming star, the statuesque Kapitolina Vasilieva, with whom he was happiest. Svetlana thought he was looking for his mother in his wives because he called her Mama, and she even wore her hair in a bun, like Nadia. Vasily commanded the Air Force in the Moscow military district, a job beyond his capabilities. Vasily drank heavily almost every day, testified his adjutant later, didn't turn up for work for weeks on end, and couldn't leave the women alone. He certainly behaved like a boy brought up by the Chekists. When some enemies were found in his command, he set up an impromptu torture chamber in his own apartment and started beating the soles of the man's feet with a thin rod.